Proverbs. The book of Proverbs is a collection of collections. It's a collections of wise sayings. And together these wise sayings become a kind of guidebook for successful living. The book of Proverbs is part of the wisdom literature of the Bible. The term, though, proverb, is from the Latin translation of the Bible. The original Hebrew word is much broader and sharper than what we usually mean by a proverb when we're using that term in English. The Hebrew term refers to almost any kind of saying that is more intense and more provocative than a typical saying. And it could take a number of different forms. It can be a riddle. It can be a comparison. It can be an essay. Or even an acrostic poem like the one that ends the book of Proverbs. Now, the phrase that's part of the opening, the Proverbs of Solomon, is not meant to suggest that everything within the book came from King Solomon. Rather, the collection represents the kind of wisdom that has been associated with Solomon. The Bible tells us in 1 Kings, God gave Solomon very great wisdom, discernment, and breadth of understanding as vast as the sand and the seashore. 1 Kings 4:29. So this characterization of Solomon represents the embodiment of biblical wisdom. So even though some of the collections come from people like Hezekiah, Agur, and Lemuel, they are recognized as being consistent with this idea of Solomonic wisdom. So that's why the book is sometimes referred to as the Proverbs of Solomon, even though he's not responsible for the entire content. Now, starting with chapter 10, and there are 31 chapters, starting with chapter 10, you have hundreds and hundreds of short, unconnected, staccato-like sayings. And they seem to be repeating the same thing over and over and over and over again. Now, if you started there, if that's where you started, and if the book itself had started there, it would be bewildering. It would be overwhelming. You'd be so confused. Fortunately, it doesn't start there. There is an extended introduction in chapters 1 through 9. And here we find a series of small essays, miniature essays, if you will, on the meaning and the value of wisdom, which we can then apply to the rest of the book. It's very important to understand the distinction between these two sections. Now, the opening verses from chapter 1, which we heard from just a moment ago, is kind of an introduction for the whole thing, really. So in verse 3, you have, for gaining instruction in wise dealing, righteousness, justice, and equity. So the book of Proverbs helps us to make good choices. This is true of all wisdom literature, if you were with me last week. Wisdom literature helps us to make good choices, wise choices about life. But Proverbs in particular helps us to make right choices that lead to success in life. But the question, though, is, what do we mean by success? Jim Collins, who's the author of Good to Great, points out that about half of our greatest business leaders in American history trashed their personal lives on their way up to the top. And he goes on to say they didn't have to do that. It was their choice based on how they defined success. Another author, Ron Jensen, has written, Make a Life, Not Just a Living. And it became a popular book. And he argues that if you succeed in your professional life, but fail in your personal life, you failed. The world defines success in terms of one's standard of living. The book of Proverbs defines success in terms of the character of one's life. The world asks, how much power and prestige and prosperity have you acquired? Whereas Proverbs asks, are you able to make choices that are right, just, and fair? Now, to be sure, Proverbs does speak about the material rewards in this life. A slack hand causes poverty, but the hand of the diligent makes rich. Chapter 10, verse 4. The idea that prosperity is the fruit of hard work is quite common in the book of Proverbs. But this could be misunderstood. Proverbs tells us what is generally true, not what is invariably true. It tells us what often happens, but it doesn't tell us what absolutely must happen. It's just what is generally the case. So, generally speaking, the harder you work and the more honest you are, the better you fare in life. That's generally true. But there are many exceptions. And those of you who are familiar with the book of Job, which we're going to take a look at next week, but in the book of Job, if you recall, it was those exceptions that tripped up the so-called friends of Job. Anyway, we need to understand that Proverbs is not promising an excessive supply of luxuries, but it is promising a plentiful supply of necessities. Jesus reaffirmed this principle when he said that if we put God's rule and righteousness first, we need not worry about receiving what we need. Matthew 6:33, seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be yours as well. Proverbs also recognize that life is often more complicated than some of the sayings might imply. Chapter 3, verse 23. The field of the poor may yield much food, but it is swept away through injustice. When a principle from Proverbs does not seem to work, this may be a reflection of the wickedness in our world, injustice, oppression, and so on. Instead of being a cause for a complaint against God, we are to see it as a challenge to fight injustice in the name of God. Chapter 14, verse 31. Those who oppress the poor insult their maker, but those who are kind to the needy honor him. The phrase beginning of that was read from verse 7, like the beginning of knowledge, or later, the beginning of wisdom. That phrase, beginning of, is a figure of speech, and it means something that is foundational. So the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. That fear of the Lord is the foundation for true knowledge and true wisdom. It is foundational because there's never a time when you don't need it. Proverbs assumes you cannot live a full and successful life unless you see God as the author of life and seek an understanding of life from God with reverence and humility. Proverbs is rather adventurous in the way it communicates its message. Wisdom is often personified as a woman. Wisdom cries out in the street. In the square, she raises her voice. At the busiest corner, she cries out. At the entrance of the city gate, she speaks. How long, O simple ones, will you love being simple? How long will scoffers delight in their scoffing and fools hate knowledge? Foolishness, on the other hand, is also personified as a woman, but in this case, as an alluring prostitute. The foolish woman is loud, she's ignorant and knows nothing. She sits at the door of her house, on a seat at the high places of the town, calling to those who pass by or are going straight on their way, "You who are simple, turn in here." And to those without sense, she says, "Stolen water is sweet, and bread eaten in secret is pleasant." And over and over again, you have these two different representations, two different directions, if you will, that you can go in life. There's a path of foolishness, wickedness, and violence, or there's the path of wisdom, goodness, and righteousness. Now, you may know the right path to take, but you still have to choose that path. You need to act on what you know. And you need to do this even when others are telling you something different. A young boy was driving a hayrack down the road and was making a slight turn in the road, and the whole hayrack turned over. This happened in front of another farmer's house, and who happened to see what had taken place. And so he came out and found the young boy crying. But he said to the young boy, "Son, don't worry about this. We can fix this. We can take care of this. Right now it's dinner time. Why don't you come on up to the house and just get a bite to eat, and then we'll come back out and I'll help you put the hay back in the rack." And the boy said, "Oh, I can't do that. I think my dad's going to be very, very angry." And the farmer said, Nonsense. Come in, relax a bit, and then we'll come back out and take care of the hay." And the boy wasn't sure about that. He said, "Oh, I think my dad's going to be very, very angry with me." But the farmer prevailed, and the young man and the farmer went back into the house, and they had dinner, and they came out and headed back for the hayrack. And so the farmer said, "Now, don't you feel better? Don't you feel more relaxed? Now we can get on to business." And the boy said, "Well, I don't know about that. I think my dad's going to be very, very angry with me." "Oh, that's ridiculous," said the farmer. "We'll talk to him and straighten this out. By the way, where is he?" And the boy said, he's under the hay. So if you know the right thing to do, you still need to act on what is the right thing to do, no matter what others tell you. All right. Now, when you read Proverbs, sometimes it comes across like a personal correspondence between parent and child. "Hear, my child, your father's instruction, and do not reject your mother's teaching." That's verse 8 of chapter 1. In reality, this style of writing was quite common in wisdom literature. It was a frequent imagery employed in wisdom literature. It was especially used in organized training, in organized teaching for young people. Someone mentioned earlier that school is about to start. Well, that's what we're talking about, a type of school. Proverbs is like a school. It's a school for successful living. Now, it involves both classroom instruction and field education. Okay? The classroom instruction is chapters 1 through 9. The field education is chapters 10 through 31. Now, some of you are pilots, right? And at the risk of oversimplifying, you have different aspects of training to be a pilot. You have ground school, and then, of course, there's time when you're actually flying the plane, learning how to fly. Okay. Well, chapters 1 through 9 is ground school. Okay? And chapters 10 to 31, well, that's practicing what you've learned. That's actually flying the plane. Let's consider a specific example. This is chapter 26, verses 4 and 5. Now, if this goes well, then after I've read this passage, you're going to be confused. Do not answer fools according to their folly, or you will be a fool yourself. Answer fools according to their folly, or they will be wise in their own eyes. Anybody confused? It's contradictory, isn't it? Do not answer. Answer. Do not answer. Answer. Well, which is it? Now, if this were part of the classroom instruction, then it's worthless because it's too contradictory. You just shrug your shoulders. I don't get this. But this isn't part of the classroom instruction. This is part of the field education. So you're supposed to take what you've learned in chapters 1 through 9, try to apply it to a real-life situation. So you have this situation. It's a case study. So now you look at the case study and figure out, oh, what am I supposed to learn from this? Well, at the very least, the lesson you're learning is think before you speak. But you see, you can't arrive at that if you're lazy. And if you skip chapters 1 through 9. So you look at this and go, okay, sometimes it makes sense to speak up. Sometimes, though, it's better just to be quiet. Think before you speak. So that's the field education. That's the case study. That's the real-life application you're supposed to practice with based on what you learn in chapters 1 through 9. Now, I'm sure you've heard many, many times the story about the tourist who asked the cab driver, how do I get to Carnegie Hall? And the cabbie says, practice, practice, practice. Okay, right? It's an old one. But that's also true of Proverbs. The logic of Proverbs is if you practice, practice, and practice, you'll find wisdom. So the book of Proverbs is part of the wisdom literature of the Bible. It contains principles for right living and general descriptions of life's realities rather than surefire promises or guarantees. Proverbs does not offer immunity from illness, accidents, or financial trouble. Its purpose is not to come up with a rule for every situation that you find in life, but to put all of life under the rule of God. A father was watching his young son trying to dislodge a heavy stone. The boy couldn't budge it. Are you sure you're using all your strength? The father asked. Yes, I am, said the exasperated boy. No, you are not, replied the father. You haven't asked me to help you. To hold on to wisdom is to hold on to God. By ourselves, this is impossible. But here's the good news. God wants to hold on to us. And with his strength, we can live the life God intended us to live.